present has gone. Fantasy is a part of reality. And we take the brakes off. We're thinking clearly, yet not thinking at all. And this feels right. We stop trying to control things. Warm rush of chemicals through us. We're fluctuating. Is this brain damage? We forget all the pain and the hurt in life. We want to go somewhere else. We're not threatened by people anymore. All our insecurities have evaporated. We're in the clouds now. We're wide open. We're spacemen, orbiting the Earth. Yeah, the world looks beautiful from here, man. We're nympholeptics, desiring for the unobtainable. We risk sanity for moments of temporary enlightenment. So many ideas, so little memory. The last thought killed by anticipation of the next. We embrace an overwhelming feeling of love. We flow in unison. We're together. I wish this was real. We want a universal level of togetherness where we're comfortable with everyone. We're in rhythm, part of a movement to escape. We wave goodbye. Ultimately, we just want to be happy.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There's been a wonderful episode so far. We've had so far three comedians, and now we're going to round off the episode with our final. His name is Ants Heath. Ants, welcome to the program.
Hey, mate, how's it going?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous is my standard response.
Not bad.
Would you be able to enlighten me as to just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
A little bit about myself. I do a bit of stand-up comedy these days. I'm trained in street theatre and physical and experimental theatre forms. I've worked as an improviser for years. I'm also the nominated representative for the Rimitaka Award for the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party. Very publicly open about the fact that I enjoy cannabis for recreational purposes and that I think that the law against it is bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably say so. The drug law comes down to this. Do you know somebody who's ever used cannabis? Yes. Do you think that they should be in jail right now because of it? No. Time to change the fucking law, mate.
Yep, pretty much, man. But as long as there's money to be made by putting people in jail, we'll have to keep fighting on.
Oh, well, thank God for private prisons, eh?
Yeah, it seems like a great idea.
I mean, what would we do without them? Not be incarcerated, still be around your family.
Free, I don't know, not be afraid of police officers. Who knows?
It's just too complicated. I just prefer slavery.
Yeah, well, you know, I work in a call centre, man. It's pretty much the same thing.
That's kind of how I did it as well. Doing the call centre thing. Are you doing telesales or are you doing inbound?
I'm inbound nowadays. Yeah, no, I don't do the outbound anymore. For those of you listening who still struggle with that, good on yous, but you're welcome to it. Yeah.
There's more money, but there's also a hell of a lot more emotional stress in the job.
Oh, so much more stress. So much more.
Now, in terms of the New Zealand comedy scene, what kind of area do you like to focus on? I mean, because I sent out this message asking for New Zealand comedians that were somewhat anti-establishment and whatnot, and your name came up. I'm wondering what led you to all of this.
I believe that was Alistair Gregory who sort of tipped you off about me. He's the Wellington regional manager for the ALCP. So he's been to I did a show during the festival called Token White Guy, which was pretty much a whole lot of stories about my youth. And rather than stories about getting arrested, most of mine were stories in which I probably should have. But I'm fortunate in that I'm white and I have an education, so I don't get arrested by police for minor infractions, unlike other people who are not as lucky.
Mm. And are you over 25?
Yeah, I'm 37, mate.
Well, see, that's often, I was doing I was in Auckland Uni doing an essay about cannabis for a project, and yep. I decided I'd ask a cop, you know, what do you look for when you look for cannabis users? And he says, groups of males under 25.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, it's literally an age thing.
yeah, pretty much is, you know. Oh, a lot of it has to do with your approach with the police as well. I mean, I've been questioned by them out the back of a bar where, you know, I offered a mate a joint and then Chinese whispers happened and I found myself out the back of a bar with 12 people looking to me to blow them out. And so I had a couple of joints on me and I proceeded to pass them around the circle, and then the cop car sort of cruised by nice and slow down the driveway. Well, actually, with a mufti. And he went by and everyone went, oh, yeah, you know, that wasn't a cop. And then, of course, you heard them hit reverse and they came through. And at the time, I was probably in my 20s, and I was dressed like a freak. I'd just finished all my training and stuff, so I was wearing giant top hats and all sorts of, odd stuff. And they came up and asked me, and a friend of mine was shocked that when the police officer said to me, what are you doing? I said, oh, we were just smoking a joint. And a friend of mine said, well, yeah, that's like the worst thing you could possibly say. And I pointed out to him, I said, sometimes the police ask you questions because they want to know the answer of the question. And then other times they're just deciding whether they want to be a prick or not. And I was smoking that joint openly as he walked towards me, and he saw me flick it away, and I reeked of weed. So there was really no point arguing that one, you know. And because I was up front and said, oh, look, I was just smoking some weed, they thought that because there was a big group of straight-dressed people standing around a freak that I was obviously selling some kind of pills. And once I said, look, no, I'm just having a joint, they said, oh, well, just go back inside and have a nice night.
Matey potatey. Because they probably would have had to arrest everybody at the party for smoking a joint if they arrested you.
The paperwork involved, what a bloody hassle, you know. So as it was, they only singled out me and another guy to be searched anyway and questioned. And, because I'd been up front with them, I mean, most police officers are aware of the hypocrisy of the situation that they're under. And they are human beings who, you know, they're not too rushed. The best thing about that whole thing was that at the time I was couch surfing. So I actually got to tell the police legitimately that I lived at no fixed abode, which was quite a buzz for myself.
I think that what it comes down to, ultimately, when we're talking about cannabis, is there's we've already won the debate. Okay, long ago, all right?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, it's over. And the fact that it's still freaking illegal just baffles the mind and makes me, I don't know, let's just say it is a certitude that there's huge quantities of lies and scumbaggery going on in order to keep this law in place. And anybody who tries to keep it in place the way it is a scumbag too.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good deal. I mean, I'd definitely trust the people that I buy marijuana off before I'd trust the people who are trying to keep it illegal. Just on the worthiness of the people that I deal with.
Yeah. I came up with a joke yesterday. I was driving over to my mate's place and I said, why do fish make really good, fair dealers? Because they've got scales.
There must be a lot of fish in the small in-town city that I lived in, mate. It's a very busy place.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But yeah, no, I just think that it's a bit rough the way that some people are treated on it and others, you know, and it is obviously hypocritical. And they have no argument against it, you know, and you just end up in that same cycle with people where, you know, drugs, you know, they tell you that drugs are bad and you ask them why and they tell you because the government says that it's illegal. And you say, well, you know, why is it illegal? And they say, well, because they're bad. And you're like, well, why are they bad? Because they're illegal. And they just sort of circle along like that until they run out of steam, really.
Yeah, it's quite easy, circular reasoning, because it's circular reasoning.
Yeah, yeah. It's the best thing about circular reasoning is that you don't have to think.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't like to. So in questioning the established, the status quo, as it were, is not everybody's thing, as it were.
Do you feel that people are getting dumber, like just in general?
I feel that I myself am getting dumber for every 5 minutes that I spend watching something stupid on YouTube. So I guess as a society, yes. I mean, the education standards, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit old now and I'm looking back on things differently, but I think that there used to be a lot more education and respect going on than there is these days. Mm. So, well, and, you know.
Have you got, like, an example of that? I mean, because I'm just thinking about it now. there's not a whole lot of difference between when I was born and when I am now today, between how kids treated me, and it's just with zero respect, because I was born in 1984, and all of a sudden, yeah, respecting your elders didn't count anymore.
Yeah, I guess so. That's pretty much how it seems to be. I mean, I regularly hear teenagers saying things in public that I, you know, that wouldn't have occurred to me to have ever said to somebody, just purely because I guess it comes down to the individual circumstances and the upbringing that you personally have, but I was brought up to believe in respecting other people and, you know, being polite and things like that, you know, and P's and Q's, they don't seem like much until you remove them from society, at which point everyone just seems a whole lot more aggressive and sort of more about themselves rather than other people. I mean, we've really lost that community feeling that we used to have, you know. Back in the early 80s, I read an article the other day about the fact that, you know, when I was a kid, if you misbehaved in the store and your parents weren't there, the store owner told you, "Oi, buck your ideas up or you're out," you know, and that was how it was, you know. Now, if he tries and does that now with a teenager, the teenager's likely to turn around and point out, "Well, actually, under the Bill of Rights, and I have rights as a human being, and you can't tell me what to do, and, you know, you're not physically allowed to remove me from your store, and if you call the police, they're not going to come, and there's really no one for you to call. My parents don't care either, so, you know, get fucked."
Or they'll just simply use the last two words in and of itself.
Well, even when they just run it down to that, you know, it's unnecessary. So, you know, there just seemed to be a lot more focus on getting on together as people.
Yeah, well, on my sticker, I've got a bumper sticker that says, "Marijuana, can't we all just get a bong?"
Yeah, exactly. You know, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? So, I mean, the big difference between straight people and people who smoke pot is that people who smoke pot don't care that straight people exist.
I would think it's a very similar story to back in the day. The CIA conducted a whole bunch of mind control experiments on people under MKUltra, which got exposed a while ago. And they did tests on people's brains with all sorts of different drugs. And the one that they stopped using for mind control was marijuana, because they found that the patients became resistant to mind control techniques if they smoked it.
Oh, God, you can't have that. Oh, my God, it's opening their minds and they're thinking for themselves. Fuck, you better get rid of that shit, man, and ban it everywhere while they're at it. You know, you can't have people thinking that they've got ideas.
Yeah. Well, it's dangerous.
Non-conformity can't be had.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not a control freak. And it just seems that somebody who's complete... Well, like... You have a look at the situation, and you say why they made it illegal, because, you know, they want to mind control you, they don't want you to be free, they don't want you to think for yourself, blah, 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 blah. And they go, "Oh, but why would somebody who's a criminal, ruthless, sociopathic scumbag with more money than God try to control things like that? It just doesn't make any sense to me." Well, maybe if you're trying to think like a ruthless, criminal, sociopathic scumbag for 2 seconds, it might make sense to you.
Yeah. It's called big bank accounts, and lots of them love it.
There's the other element as well, of course, the medical treatment of patients. And do you know anybody who's got medical problems who treats them with cannabis? I do, you know.
Yep, I do.
Yeah. And for goodness sake, I've seen what these guys are like with and without the weed. Without the weed, it is a life of pain, suffering, and anguish, and torment. With the weed, it is comfortable and livable.
Yeah, but the problem is, Vinny, that as you well know, Big Pharma doesn't make any money if you just plant yourself a plant in the backyard and smoke that and get healthy. I mean, what's that going to do to the bottom line of the Lilly Corporation? You just can't have that kind of activity going on. I mean, it's where the bushes get most of their money from. They make more money from pharmaceuticals than they ever did out of oil, you know, because they convinced an entire country that they needed to be on antidepressants and hard pills, for fuck's sake. I mean, the fact... If you want to take away, like, you know, there are people who say, "Well, yeah, you shouldn't smoke pot, you're just a stupid stoner," whatever, you know. If they've got a problem with me smoking it recreational, that's one thing. But when you're actually refusing to give people good, healthy, safe cheap medication that can change their lives to the better in such a massive way, and your argument to it is, well, we can't do it because there's this side effect, you see, and you'll end up stoned, and unfortunately that means that you'll be chatty and you'll enjoy life more and you'll eat. And, you know, so obviously we can't possibly give you that. Now, we have this pill. It's about $100. It doesn't really work as well, and you'll need the other 45 pills that go with it because of the massive life-threatening risk of side effects from that first pill. But, you know, that's the way that we're going to do it, because we can't let people just grow dope, because, you know, you never know how strong it is. You know, and that to me is the most disgusting thing that the government's ever done on the entire scale. I mean, I would actually quite gladly give up my ability to smoke it recreationally if they could only allow complete and open access to everybody who needs it for medical use.
Well, they're talking about it in the United States now, that they're going to have what they call cannabis welfare. So people who can't afford a ganja will actually be given it if they've got medical problems and things of that nature for free by certain dispensaries, or at least that's what they're talking about now. We're talking about a...
Brilliant idea.
Sorry, what was it? Yeah, it's a good idea, isn't it? And the other element here that I find particularly interesting about the drug law is not only the fact that it's used as a discrimination for, like, young people, not only the fact that it's used as, I don't know, more or less keeping the cookies away from the children in terms of the medical patients, you know, ensuring that they don't live a happy life, but I think it's a war on consciousness. Simply that it turns us against each other. All these people, particularly my elders sometimes, who have not used cannabis before, every time I tell them I'm going through a hard time, emotional issues or something like that, like everybody does, guess what the first thing they say is the cause of them all?
Oh, you've got to get off that weed there, Vinny. That's your problem. Get off that weed and you'll be fine, mate. There's your problem right there. Get off the weed.
Yeah.
Think about it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've been through the same argument. Luckily, I have a really enlightened doctor who understands and doesn't have any problems with it. And I've had a few enlightened doctors over the years, you know, but you've got to be honest with doctors about drug use, because, you know, you never know when it's going to actually be pertinent. So, you know, but, I find that the whole divide and conquer aspect is definitely what they're into, you know? And, I mean, we've got these buffoons in government at the moment really trying to crank it about how, you know, still towing the line that, you know, marijuana's illegal because it's not safe for you. And yet we've just gone through the most ridiculous experiment. Well, maybe I'll call it an experiment. It was more of a profit-making drive, really, to have this synthetic crap. You know, so how did New Zealand end up in a position where we are now years behind America with the freeing up of cannabis regulation? I mean, that's just, to me, that blows my mind.
Even more so than AK-47, I'll wager.
AK-47 is pretty good if you get it grown in the right conditions.
Yeah, kind of like shrooms. When we talk about comedy, shifting gears a little bit here, I think that maybe you'll agree with the statement, maybe you won't. I believe that comedy is the most effective medium for giving people information that they're not prepared to listen to.
Yeah, I'd say it works well for that. It depends on the comedian and what their buzz is, and I don't like to get into the conversation of, well, as a comedian, you should be saying this, you know, or you should be saying that. I think to me the litmus test is quite simple. I get up on a stage and I say things, and if the room full of people laugh, then generally I consider that to be a joke, and we go with that. You know, quite often I do sort of bring up things that, you know, the hypocrisy of things, or the, you know, just the general, I guess I get annoyed with the general stupidity around us a lot. And so I do talk about that quite a bit and point out situations that drive me insane that I find quite a lot of people do go through with me as well. So you get that sort of common ground. And I think for all comedy, that's really what you're after, is to just is to find a common ground and get people to understand you and know you as a mate and understand that, hey, if he says something highly offensive, it's probably just a joke. You know, let's move on from that. But you can, there's definitely the power there to make people face things that they don't really like to face. And, you know, and I do enjoy when I do a particularly offensive piece, I love that moment after the laugh. So the audience will laugh and then there's a silence for a couple of seconds and I know that the entire room is sitting there thinking, did I just laugh at that? You know, so and that for me is always fun. I like to confront people with that kind of material.
Is that because when something's funny, it's usually because it's true? I mean, people say that the truth hurts, and I'm starting to believe the opposite, that the truth is frickin' hilarious.
I think it cuts both ways, really. I mean, there's some stuff that's completely made up that people find hilarious, but when I do face them with the truth, they sort of get a giggle out of that as well. I mean, it's... Yeah, it can be either way, and it really does depend on the kind of room that you've got. So, you know, that's one thing that has to be taken into account. Sometimes you'll have a very serious room who, you know, will freak out if you make the slightest racial slur, and then sometimes you'll have a room who are fine with jokes about paedophilia, and you've just sort of got to work it out. And occasionally I have gotten it wrong, but, you know, for the most part, I try to aim where they want me to go.
Well, that reminds me, I was at the classic comedy bar one time filming my sister doing her gig, and one of the guys who came out on stage had, like, the worst set you could ever conceive of in your life, as in the highlight of it was questioning whether or not he's a pedophile on stage, and it was just not funny, and it made everybody really uncomfortable. And then then he went off stage, and I think he took like an extra 5-10 minutes on his set that he was supposed to. He's just sitting there waffling, rambling, didn't realise that his set was over. And all of the comedians there that night were reasonably good. Some were real, real funny, and these were all newbies, right? And guy who was sort of, you know, the professional comedian there who's like introducing everybody or whatever, he comes out on stage and he goes... something along the lines of like, all these people here are like my children, and somebody shouts out from the crowd, "You've had at least one abortion," and the whole crowd like uproared with like huge applause and stuff like that, and it was so ironic that the head comedian was like, you know, I've never actually heard people laugh that loud at an abortion joke.
Yep, it's you know, it's all about timing and place, you know, and you've just got to. I say there are some that believe that there are hard and fast rules. I'm just not one of those people.
Now, my question to you is, can you even teach somebody how to be humorous, or is it just a natural thing that you work out on your own? You work out your own timing, you watch other comedians. It's not like a mentoring thing.
I think it's one of those things. I think that if you really, really want it, if you wake up every day and you just get, fuck it, I want to be a comedian, then with enough work you can get there. And I think that there are some people working who are possibly, you know, they're just really hard workers. I guess it's, you know, I'm from the theatre industry originally, and it's just like the theatre industry, is that you'll have some people who, you'll have different ranges of talent and then different amounts of work, and if you're really talented, then you don't necessarily have to work so hard and you just sort of fly through it. If it's not so natural to you, then you can work on it. There's tons of classes. I mean, God, the internet gives you enough information now, but you can learn how to structure jokes and things like that and have very well-scripted work. So, yeah, I think it's pretty open opportunities, really. It just depends on who you are and what kind of comedy you want to do. But the number one thing is you have to really want to do it, because, you know, it's bloody hard work, and you've got to die on stage a few times, which is never nice.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, last question before we have to wrap up the show here is, have there ever been any wonderful experiences or maybe bad experiences that you'd like to recount? Something that happened that maybe was a little off topic or off script that was just like so freaking funny that you've remembered it up until now?
Oh, at a gig?
Yeah.
It'd be a really drunk chick who showed up for a gig that I was emceeing a few years ago during the comedy festival. And she came in, and you know, she was quite rowdy with her mates, and it was a rookie lineup, and there's nothing that'll scare a group of rookies more than hearing some drunk cow just going off at everybody, you know. So she'd sort of started to kick up a wee bit during my opening set, and I'd laid it down pretty quickly to her. I chatted to her a bit. She was wearing a white tracksuit and drunk, so I called her Hut Bride, that kind of thing, you know. And just sort of explained to her that, look, you know, I'm the MC and I've got a bit of experience, and if you want to throw stuff at me, that's all right, because I'm pretty lazy and I don't write material anyway, so it'll just fill my time. But if you could just leave the other acts alone, that'd be great, because they're rookies, they've got their sets all lined up, and you'll just throw them and everyone will have a bad night. And, yeah, so, she went on to lambast and give absolute, you know, terrors to everybody who to the first act who got up, which had the rest of the rookies sweating bullets. And I pointed out those, you know, the next one when I was about to go on, I said, oh, no, she's going to ruin the whole night. And I said, no, she won't ruin the whole night. And she said, oh, what do you mean? I said, I'll watch. So, yeah, I got out for my second bit and said, oh, you know, yeah, are you having a good night? And she went, no, and I knew because she'd been arguing with her mates. And she said, no, and I said, oh, this is... I know what happened. Did your whole night go sort of pear-shaped? And she's like, yeah. And I said, oh, did you have a great night planned? And just everything turned to poo. And she's like, yeah. And I said, yeah, well, that's great. That happened to me as well. I mean, what happened in your case? Did you have some drunk bitch show up at your gig and not learn to shut the fuck up? And, yeah, that was probably, for me, that would be one of my favourite moments on stage.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That was a heckler kill. I had to be nasty, but yeah, when I get to be nasty with them, it is quite enjoyable.
Well, I found the nasty heckler slapdowns to be some of the best. There was one gig I was at where there was a really overweight Australian comedian, amateur, and somebody shouts out in the crowd, "Why are you so fat?" And he says to him, "Because every time I fuck your mother, she gives me a jelly bean."
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes... I always do the conversation with them first and let them know that, you know, no, that's not really on, and I'd rather that you just, you know, quietly enjoyed the show. But there comes a point, especially if they're really drunk, where you just have to be brutal, because I need it to be over and done with, you know. It has to be made quite clear, no matter how drunk they are, that this is not going to continue, and they're not going to ruin the entire night for everybody. And, you know, I've been on the receding end of it myself as the drunk heckler guy. So, you know, I do have compassion for them where they're coming from, but everyone else has paid for their tickets and expects to enjoy their night as well.
Wonderful New Zealand comedian Ants Heath, ladies and gentlemen. Ants, where can people find more of your material and find out when your next gigs are and whatnot?
Oh, they can check me out on, I'm on Facebook, like most people are, so if you check out the Book of Face, Ants Heath, Token White Guy, you'll find that, and I put updates there for all of my future and upcoming gigs.
Right, thank you very much for your time today, mate. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Bear in mind, this is a predominantly listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to keep these broadcasts going and giving people a platform to speak about things that, well, basically the mainstream media will never give you 25 minutes of just frickin' airtime to say whatever you want, so if you want that to continue, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood hasn't go ahead. Make my news. And go ahead and make a donation. And start up those automatic payments as well. $5 a month, $10 a month. We have certain listeners who do $100 or $50 a month and things of that nature. All of it is simply just to, you know, pay the expenses of life so that I can continue to expose scumbaggery and help the innocent. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.